listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Thank you so much for listening. I'm sorry it's been so long since we had an episode, at least 3 weeks. I didn't really look to count. I know it was in November. We haven't had one this month. All I have to say is my only excuse is life, Thanksgiving, as well as a trip to Kansas City to visit Kelvy, my oldest daughter. You know, it's just kept me busy, kept me away from being able to schedule interviews. So I am expecting to have a discussion next week with Iowa Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer. Hopefully we'll also have one coming up with Iowa House Majority Leader Chris Hagenow to kind of preview what to expect with when the Iowa legislature comes into a session in January. So that should be upcoming, hopefully next week. I got a conversation with Senator Whitfer scheduled for next week. This week, and it was a treat for me because Brian Myers and I had a conversation about Michael Cohen, the Russia investigation, Donald Trump. What else? Oh, we talked about the Weekly Standard. We spoke earlier this afternoon. It was a treat for me because he and I co-hosted the Caffeinated Thoughts radio show on KTIA 99.3 FM, The Truth, for 3 years. And it's been weird. It's been over a year now since we stopped doing the show. So I don't get to see him as often, don't get to talk with him as often. So I loved having this conversation with him. So I hope you enjoyed it. Before we get to that conversation, actually, first a word from our sponsor, American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Something that I should always state, and I haven't stated before, just a disclaimer. What is said on this podcast is is the reflection of my opinion as well as the opinion of my guests, not necessarily those that sponsor this podcast. So wanted to make that abundantly clear, something I probably should have done a long time ago. But I appreciate American Principles Project as a sponsor. They have some exciting things going on. Be sure to check out our story at Caffeinated Thoughts. They released their 2019 agenda for pro-family conservatives. It's you'll find it right on the front page. Social Conservative Group unveils 2019 agenda for pro-family conservatives. See what they're up to. I'm jazzed about what they're up to. Also, full disclosure, I work with them and been proud to do so since 2010. So anyway, exciting things on the horizon for American Principles Project and American Principles Project Foundation. So go check them out. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org as well as APPFDC.org. So hey, without further ado, here's my conversation with a friend that shouldn't need no introduction, Brian Myers, senior contributor with Caffeinated Thoughts and former co-host with me with Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We had a lengthy conversation about all things Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. So hope you enjoy.
Brian, it's been a long time since you and I have actually done a podcast together. So I'm jazzed.
Who are you again?
Bring the team back. When we did the radio program, we were doing this on a weekly basis, and I really missed that. So it's good to just kind of have a chat. And I have to apologize to our listeners because it's been probably about 3 weeks since I've done a podcast.
Shame on you, Shane.
Well, Thanksgiving had a part of that, and then we traveled last weekend down to Kansas City to see Kelvy, so that cut my week short. So And I just haven't been able to arrange an interview, which hopefully we got. I'm going to be talking to. I know I'm going to be talking next week with Senate Majority Iowa Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitford. So that should be good. But I wanted to you know have a discussion about the latest with Donald Trump and the Russia investigation and Michael Cohen, because there's been a lot that's been happening and
yeah.
I don't think we're going to actually necessarily come to any conclusions here, but the Michael Cohen thing is a mess because, from what I read, we got two former FEC chairmen that have opposite views of Cohen's culpability and how it might impact Donald Trump.
Exactly. This guy by the name of Von Spakovsky, and what's the other guy's name? There's another one here. Brad Smith.
Yeah, Brad Smith.
Yeah, both of these guys were FEC commissioners, and they're saying this is not necessarily a violation. Interestingly enough, apparently, I didn't see it, but apparently Alan Dershowitz was on Fox this morning, and he was saying the same thing. There's a difference between something being wrong and something being illegal, apparently, here, that there seems to be some disagreement on.
Right. Well, I think we can all come to a consensus to say paying off porn stars to hide an adulterous affair is a scumbag.
That might be wrong.
That would be, I think, wrong. I think no reasonable person would come to the opposite conclusion.
Right.
I mean, you have to be a diehard, die in the wall, color my hair orange, Donald Trump fan. To say, oh, there was nothing wrong with this. But I've always thought when, you know, the hush, I thought there could be a million and one reasons why Donald Trump would do this that had nothing to do with the campaign.
That's true.
Like it was, for instance, his standard operating procedure, it seemed like.
Well, that was one of the arguments I heard earlier today, I think on the radio, is that this is something that Trump has maybe done the entirety of his whole life, has paid off people to keep them from saying things that reflected badly on him. So this is just, like you say, a standard operating procedure for him. But again, even if you could prove that the intent, as Cohen is suggesting, that the intent was for Trump to pay this hush money so he would not be damaged in the campaign. Even if he could prove that, there's apparently, like I say, some disagreement with respect to whether that's actually a criminal act.
Right, right. Yeah, Brad Smith, he wrote basically Donald Trump's wayward counsel, Michael Cohen. This is a op-ed he wrote in the National Review. Who's not necessarily on National Reviews, they're Trump skeptical. I don't want to call them never Trump, like the Weekly Standard, which I want to bring up a little bit later because some big news with Weekly Standard. But
yeah.
Donald Trump's wayward counsel, Michael Cohen, was sentenced today as part of a plea bargain with the government. As part of that settlement, Cohen has admitted to criminal violations of federal campaign finance law and has implicated President Trump in those violations. The press is ablaze with headlines trumpeting the president's possible involvement with two felony campaign finance violations. The source of these violations are Mr. Cohen's arranging, allegedly at Trump's direction, hush money payments to women alleging long-ago affairs with the 2016 presidential candidate. The Federal Election Campaign Act holds that an expenditure is any purchase, payment, loan, advance, deposit, or gift of money or anything of value for the purpose of influencing any election for federal office. According to Cohen and the U.S. attorney, the hush money payments were, it appears, made in hopes of preventing information from becoming public before the election, and hence were, quote, for the purpose of influencing, unquote, the election. This means that at a minimum, they had to be reported to the FEC, the Federal Election Commission. Further, if they were authorized by Mr. Trump, they would become, in the law's parlance, quote, coordinated expenditures, unquote, subject to limits on the amounts that could be spent. Since the lawful contribution limit is much lower than the payments made and the payments were not reported, this looks like an open shut case, right? He said, well, no, at least not in the way some might presume. To the contrary, the law following our common sense tells us that hush money payments outlined by the U.S. attorney are clearly not campaign expenditures. There's no violation of the Federal Election Campaign Act. It goes on. It's a long article. I encourage you guys to read it at National Review. It's called Michael Cohen Pled Guilty, Something That Is Not a Crime. I think Michael Cohen's biggest mistake was lying to Congress. I think had he not done that, the other stuff wouldn't have happened. What do you think?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, who knows what went on between the FBI and Cohen? Real quickly, I just want to point out that I want to come back to what we were just talking about there, but I wanted to point out that Dershowitz's argument is slightly different than the one you just read. Dershowitz is saying it's not illegal. A presidential candidate under the law could spend $1 billion of his own money to do anything in the campaign. And that would not be a crime. A president is entitled to make campaign contributions to his own campaign. So his argument seems to be slightly different than the one you just read. But back to Cohen. But back to Cohen. One thing that's bothered me a lot, and obviously I'm not a lawyer and you aren't either, but you know they raided his office last April, and I realized that. The law pierces the privilege that the attorney-client privilege. I realize that there's times when that privilege can be pierced because of criminal activity. But I got to tell you, I was shocked when I heard they raided his office. I mean, this is the personal attorney of the President of the United States, and they raided his office. They seized his business records, his emails, his documents, and so on and so forth. And yeah. I tell you, if you're going to do that, you better make darn sure that you didn't just violate the constitutional rights of the President of the United States. And I know at the time, again, thinking of Alan Dershowitz here, I remember he went absolutely ballistic when that happened. That's a big deal when you do that.
And yeah, I think they needed to have, obviously they needed to have some compelling evidence to present to a judge to get a search warrant to be able to do that. But it did seem like it was an overstep, especially since raiding that office and collecting those records, that could end up violating the privilege for other clients you might have as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, what are they going to do when they go through that stuff? Well, we can look at this, and this we can't look at. Well, they're going to look at all of it, you know?
Right.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, yeah, I saw that as problematic. I had read, too, that he had met with the FBI without an attorney present, which I'm like, you're an attorney, and you did what?
Yeah.
Like, are you an idiot?
He is, actually.
I don't
Since
think
you asked.
A good lawyer. First of all, if I were him, I'm not sure I would have pled guilty, and because I don't think – I'm not entirely convinced they'd be able to win in court, the prosecution.
That occurred to me, too. Yeah.
So, you know, well, I think what they got him on is lying to Congress. And then they flipped him on this other stuff, and it was lying to Congress. I mean, had he, first of all, I guess lawyered up, a lot of that may not have happened. So, I ended up tweeting when I heard about that he met with the FBI without a lawyer present. That one of the things that I learned when I was working with juvenile offenders. Well, first of all, I think people would be amazed at how often adults and juveniles incriminate themselves before a lawyer ever shows up. I did some
constantly.
Training with I did some training out in Boston when we were starting up when I was with Serve Our Youth Network, and we were starting up Second Chance Juvenile Mentoring Act program. And one of the speakers that came to our training was the lady who runs the Children's Law Defense or Children's Legal Defense Center out in Boston. And she has wristbands that she gives to her clients that say, "I don't want to talk right now. I want my lawyer."
That's a fantastic idea.
And this is setting Cohen aside for a second, just to remind people, hopefully you're never in any kind of a bind that you're questioned by the police. I hope you're never in a situation where that happens. Sometimes people who there are innocent people who get caught up on all this, and the thing to remember, the police, if they're investigating a crime and they're questioning you, they're not your friends.
That's
they're
right.
They're not looking out for your best interest. So
they're looking to get a conviction. That's their job.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, for instance, she would say police would come up and when something a crime happened in the neighborhood, and they had a list of kids that they would go check on, and these kids would end up admitting to something completely opposite of what the police were questioning them about, and just say, "Do you have a warrant? No, I don't want to talk, and I definitely don't want to talk
without
a lawyer. Have to talk to the police.
Be respectful, be submissive, but don't talk to them." Exactly.
Right. It's your Fifth Amendment right. You don't have to talk to them. You have the right to remain silent. And
but you know, Shane,
better off if you did.
That's right. But Shane, what all this reminds me, again, special counsels are always bad. It doesn't matter if it's a Democrat administration or a Republican administration. Special counsels are always bad. They destroy people whether or not they've actually done anything. And you can ask Scooter Libby or Casper Weinberger about that. And the thing of it is, when they do get a conviction, they rarely have anything to do with the subject of the original probe. I'll be shocked when the dust all settles on this. I will be shocked if they actually have any evidence of real collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. But it isn't going to matter. You're still going to have a bunch of people end up in jail or bankrupt or both.
Right. Hey, Michael Cohen, this obviously a campaign finance violation has nothing to do with Russian collusion, period.
Actually, yeah, Stormy Daniels has nothing to do with Russia, okay? Just saying.
Right, right. And, his admission that there was an initial contact made with Russians actually bolsters the claim that was no collusion when he ended up blowing them off. So,
I know we're talking primarily about Cohen today, but have you read much about this Jerome Corsi guy?
Very little, but I wasn't a fan of his prior to this. I mean, less so now.
Well, no, I think Corsi's kind of he strikes me as a kind of a guy who he puts himself out there in the public as some sort of martyr. So, but let's just set that aside for the moment. If what he's saying here is true, and I have to admit, I'm sympathetic to this. He is contending that defendant Mueller, because Corsi is suing Mueller. I shouldn't say Mueller, Mueller. I get the theologian and the counsel mixed up.
I think of Ferris Bueller, Mueller.
Yeah, there you go.
Mueller.
Well, in this quote, Corsi says, "Defendant Mueller has threatened to indict plaintiff Corsi and effectively put him in federal prison for the rest of his life unless the plaintiff would provide the false testimony that they demanded, even after being informed that the testimony desired would be false," unquote. In other words, he told him straight out, "I can't tell you that, or say that in court. It's not true. They don't care." And I mean, that tells you a little something about how warped this whole process is.
Right.
They don't, I mean, if you go up there and you tell and you sing in court and you tell them what they want to hear, they don't care if it's true or not. They just put the squeeze on you until you sing. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Again, this is Jerome Corsi, and I think Corsi's had some. He's had an interesting relationship with the truth.
Sure. Sure. And like I say, this business of him being a martyr, you know, I kind of, you know, roll my eyes when I see that. But
right.
If what he's saying here is true, and I tell you what, from what I've read over the years about federal prosecutions, this could very well be true. Even if, of course, he's kind of a slimy character. I don't just rule it out. I think it's quite possible what he's saying is in fact true.
Okay, well, I mean, it could be out, and I don't know if we'll ever actually end up knowing. My hope is that this is coming to a conclusion. I think it's in the best interest of the country that this comes to a conclusion. I know Democrats just like to see it go on and on and on, but I don't think it's healthy for the presidency. So I don't know how long Mr. Mueller thinks he should get to investigate.
See, now you're saying it too.
Well, I think the investigation needed to go unabated, but without presidential interference.
No, I meant the pronunciation of the word Mueller and Mueller.
Mueller, Mueller. Oh,
that's my fault, buddy. Yeah, I missed you up.
Yeah, sorry, Mueller. It's been, you know, here we're going on 2 years. I don't know how long he thinks he's going to get to have. And it'll be interesting to see with the new attorney general that's coming into office, if that person won't rein him in some. If I were the attorney general coming in, I would say, hey, look, you have a deadline. You need to basically, well, I'm not going to say the phrase I was thinking of, because that wouldn't be appropriate. But you need to either fish or cut bait here. You should be able to come up with, if you have not found anything, any conclusions after 2 years, you're probably not going to find, because it's just going to get colder and colder and colder. So
yeah. Well, speaking of deadlines, there is a Friday afternoon, which we're there. It's Friday afternoon. There's a Friday afternoon deadline that special counsel Robert Mueller faces to turn over documents related to former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's first interview with federal prosecutors. So the judge wants to see all the relative documents in connection with that interview. And it will be really interesting to see if the judge tosses the whole thing out and makes Michael Flynn, what's the word when a guy is under suspicion and they, whatever it is, they're going to make him righteous again. That's the expression.
Exonerate.
They're make him righteous again. No. It's a slang, you know. You're going to be made righteous again.
Gotcha.
Anyway.
So. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. But I think at some point there needs to be, you know, the new attorney general needs to say to Mueller, look, first of all, you need to limit this to Russia collusion. This was the mandate you were given, and you've gone far beyond it, and he needs to be reined in. If nothing else, to keep him on task. It's like, you know, we have U.S. attorneys that can investigate all this other stuff. That's not why you were hired. You need to investigate Russia, period. That's it.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know. These special counsels, they, you know, I think the expression is we go where the evidence leads us. Well, you know, it goes down 1,000 rabbit trails. That's what it does.
Right. Well, yeah, but, you can find – yeah, but, you know, I would say that's And so that's not your job. Your job is to investigate Russia. Period. And you need to have it wrapped up by this period, you know, this date. Or you need to at least give me updates to so I know your progress. So I know there's going to be eventually an end to this thing. Otherwise, we're not going to have a perpetual investigation that lasts throughout President Trump's first term. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll see if that actually happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. What do you think of President Trump's nominee for Attorney General?
Truthfully, I don't know that much about him.
Okay. Well, he was formerly Attorney General from George H.W. Bush, so I thought that was interesting. I think that would help his confirmation process because,
absolutely.
Been there, done this. And
been there, done that, yeah.
And you can't say the guy's inexperienced. So I thought it was an interesting choice. I mean, I was thrilled when Matt Whitaker was made acting AG, even though I can understand some of the pushback. That since he was never confirmed that he shouldn't have been in that role, but hey, I was like, yes, former Hawkeye, a guy I know,
Hawkeye. Let's just forget about that for the moment.
That's the most important part of his resume. That he was. Who cares that he was a U.S. attorney? He was tight end for the Iowa Hawkeyes. That's the
Oh, Vanderhart, you're so full of it.
So I was, you know, I could say, hey, I know the guy who's the acting attorney general of the United States, and he's been on.
No, but Matt really did. Matt really did. Times. Yeah, Matt really did step into the hot seat there, didn't he? At least for a short time.
He did. I'm glad. I'm glad he did not. I mean, it was wise not to let him. You know, he's just there to kind of guide the ship and keep the wheels on the bus and not do anything dramatic. Which I think that would have been inappropriate if had he done that. So, you know, that was the role he was taking on when he took the reins. It was just kind of keep the ship steered in the right direction, I guess. So,
yeah.
But I suspect the new Congress comes into session. I got to think of his name. What is his name? I got to say his name at least once while we're on, while recording. Instead of just referring to him as the AG nominee.
You're having a mental block.
I'm having a mental block. I can't think of his name. This is awful. Gotta pull it up because I wrote a story about it, which makes it even worse. I wrote about him and I can't remember his name. Oh, William Barr. William Barr.
There we go.
Yep. So anyway,
no, I would have bailed you out there if I could have thought of it either, bud, but.
Right. So, you know, I he was an interesting choice because actually he said, and I'm sure NARAL and everybody's going ballistic about it, but let's see here if I can actually pull it up because my FaceTime notification thing is blocking that tab on my computer screen, so I can't get back to that tab I just pulled up. Oh, let's see here.
Oh, well. Oh, well.
Lovely things about. Yeah. Okay. So he actually made a very, most people kind of are in their nomination process when they're asked about Roe v. Wade are very noncommittal. But he.
By necessity, usually, yeah.
Yeah. The Los Angeles Times reported 1991. The Attorney General designate William P. Barr, revealing his view on abortion for the first time, said Wednesday that the Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion was wrongly decided and should be overturned. Testifying at the second and final day of the Senate confirmation hearings, Barr said he believes that he has the right, that the right to privacy is in the Constitution, but it did not extend to abortion as the Supreme Court said it did in the 1973 case. Anyway, Biden said that he was startled by his answer, but while he didn't agree with Barr, he said his response was the first candid answer he had heard on a super sensitive question one that judicial nominees traditionally refuse to answer. It's outstanding to me. Biden said you should be complimented. Biden saying this. Barr speaking in a flat, matter-of-fact tone said he had voiced throughout the unusually placid hearings that said the question of allowing abortions is a legitimate issue for state legislators. That's where the decision ought to be. So I'm like, that's interesting. And
well, you know, I've forgotten now where I saw this. It was a documentary that I think was shown on PBS, and I've forgotten now who this guy was. But he was making the case that even if you were pro-choice, as a matter of law, you really probably shouldn't like the legal justification that was set forth as the principle behind Roe v. Wade. So if you might even be able to find a pro-choice, you know, attorney or two out there, you know, legal expert or constitutional expert that says on the one hand he's pro-choice and on the other this was really bad law.
Right. So it was definitely a bad law. So and poorly written, and the philosophy behind it and what they took to get to where they got is just amazing. Not in a good way. So just the linguistic gymnastics that takes place to justify that position as being constitutional is just amazes me. Well, President Trump broke his silence over this whole thing.
You're going to ask about the tweets, aren't you? And I haven't read them.
Yeah,
Shane.
I'm going to read them to you. See.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah, a series of five tweets. Let's see if I can. No, I'm not going to try to do a Donald Trump voice. He said, first tweet, and this is again early morning, 7:17 a.m. So probably actually a little bit later than he normally spots.
Well, yeah, he does his best work at 3 a.m.
Right.
On Twitter.
He says, right. He says, I never directed Michael Cohen to break the law. He was a lawyer and he is supposed to know the law. It's called advice of counsel, and a lawyer has a great liability if a mistake is made. That's why they get paid. Despite that, many campaign finance lawyers have strongly, .. Second tweet. Took him till 7:25 to write this one. Stated that I did nothing wrong with respect to campaign finance laws, if they even apply, because this was not campaign finance. Cohen was guilty on many charges unrelated to me, but he pled to two campaign charges which were not criminal, and of which he probably was not guilty even on a civil basis. This is the third tweet, 7:39 a.m. on December 13th. He said those charges were just agreed to him to this. Excuse me. Those charges were just agreed to by him in order to embarrass the president. I love when he refers to himself in third person, and get a much reduced prison sentence, which he did, including the fact that his family was temporarily let off the hook. As a lawyer, Michael has great liability to me. Then fourth tweet, this is actually at 10 o'clock, so a few hours. He says they gave General Flynn a great deal because they were embarrassed by the way he was treated. The FBI said he didn't lie, and they overrode the FBI. They went to scare everybody into making up stories that are not true by catching them in the smallest of misstatements. Sad. Then final tweet, witch hunt. So his favorite.
Well, I tell you what, the second to the last one, I think the president is spot on.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that people didn't do some things wrong. I'm not saying that there was no illegality in anything that anybody ever said or did relative to the investigation. I'm not saying that. I am saying, however, that I know how these investigations work. I know their modus operandi, and what he suggested there about people being squeezed and people being held legally to account for the smallest misstatements, he's exactly right. And right. as we discussed, and as we discussed earlier, we don't know what the FBI got on Cohen, and who knows what they got when they raided his office. And I could easily see them saying, okay, look, we're going to cut you a break here. Let's say they've got him in some other totally disconnected thing, has nothing to do with Trump whatsoever. And they've got him on that. And maybe right. it carries a 10 or a 20 year prison sentence. Then they say, we'll give you 3 if you give us damning testimony relative to the president. And yeah. whether it's true or not, Cohen says, okay, I'll take the deal. And don't kid yourself. That stuff goes on all the time.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It amazes me. Well, the judicial system. So, I mean, it's amazing how many people just they'll take a lesser deal just to avoid potential prison time or less prison time when they think they're going to be facing, like, you know, 20, 30 years in prison. Suddenly, maybe, you know, 6 months, a year, possibly deferred sentence. You know, that yeah. sounds pretty darn good. But I think a lot of ways it's, I mean, there's a number of things going on. One, you got, you know, taking these particular cases and setting them aside, you just have a judicial system that's just totally maxed out. I mean, you got so many cases that come before them, and it's hard to give everybody. I mean, the concept of a speedy trial I think the founders right. would be like rolling in their graves right now to know yep. how long it takes for somebody to come to, you know, for a trial to come and a sentence to be given. And so it's it's pretty frightening. I think a lot, especially poor clients who have poor representation, end up getting railroaded into making plea deals they probably shouldn't make.
No, you're exactly right. You are exactly right.
But, you know, with these particular cases, like, you know, Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen and, you know, others, unfortunately for them, they're not very nice people, and they actually did break
no.
the law.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, I mean, I think these guys, you know, are pretty seedy characters. But I think at the end of the day, simply because these guys plead guilty, you know, for this or that or the other thing, that doesn't tell me anything about the reality of whether or not Trump did anything wrong. I mean, right. we're still in this, especially on this whole business of the campaign finance laws. We've got this guy pleading guilty to something which a number of legal experts are saying isn't even a crime, let alone that yeah. it has anything connected with Trump. So, you know, we've got liberals out there just, you know, dancing around celebrating, you know, and salivating and thinking this is it. We got him. You know, we're going to impeach him. And they may very well go ahead and impeach him. It's going to go nowhere when it gets to the Senate, but they'll.
Right. I think I'd be shocked at the end of by 2020 if President Trump has not been impeached.
Right.
I don't see Democrats restraining themselves. I think.
But there's
there's
a difference between him being impeached and actually
being convicted. No, he won't be thrown out of office. Right.
Right.
It'll be a Bill Clinton situation.
Yes.
And if Democrats are not careful. Just like I think Republicans learned when they impeached Bill Clinton, it's going to backfire.
It could. It certainly could.
Unless something Mueller releases something that shows definitive collusion with the Russians, and it's airtight. You know, I think impeaching him for anything less is going to be a mistake.
I agree. If it at least at the moment, this sounds like the strongest thing that they've got him on is this kind of campaign finance thing relative to Stormy Daniels. If that's all they've got and they impeach him, I don't think the American people are going to think that's such a good idea.
Right. And Yeah. Also, to, you know, when it comes to that, it's like, would that had that news come out that he had an affair with Stormy Daniels actually change the outcome of the race? I doubt it. I really doubt it.
Yeah, and I heard somebody saying on the radio earlier today that's a big deal to some people. They've got it in their heads that had that come out well in advance of the election, he never would have won. Therefore, this suggests to them that he's an illegitimate president, you know, that was falsely elected, blah, 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 blah.
The thing is, people already knew he was a serial adulterer.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So I don't think, he had an affair with the porn star. Shocker.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's awful. It's disgusting. It's awful. It's one of the reasons why I didn't vote for him.
Sure.
But when people were casting their vote against Hillary Clinton, I don't think it would have necessarily been a deal breaker.
No. And does it surprise anybody that a guy with Donald Trump's ego, his money, and his stature doesn't try to spread money around to buy silence? Does that shock anybody? No. As a matter of fact, they expect it. It's like I say, I think an argument can be made he's been doing that for most of his adult life.
Well, as Brad Smith pointed out in his op-ed in National Review, he said there could be a billionaire candidate who just decides to settle lawsuits just because he doesn't want them to be a distraction when he's running for office. Is that a campaign finance, you know, violation? No.
Right.
he just wants to settle that stuff before he runs for office. So now, had he paid for it with campaign money, that would have been a different story. But, you know, when it's your own personal finances, that's the thing that people just keep that seems to be lost on a bunch of people here. It was Trump's personal money that he used to do this.
And that's what Dershowitz is saying is, you know, even if he was doing it for the benefit of his stature in the campaign, he can do that because he can spend as much money as he wants personally on his campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, that was Dershowitz's argument. So in other words, even if you can show that it was specifically intended to help him relative to the campaign, it doesn't matter. He can spend as much money as he wants in that regard. It's his own money. Anyway, this has been really, really confusing to see Cohen copping a plea on something which may not even be criminal, which leads me to conclude what I said earlier, which is that they got him on something else and offered him this as a lesser plea, if he was willing to attempt to give the goods on President Trump. Now, what do I know? Okay, I'm speculating, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit if that's really the case.
Oh yeah, I know. Well, even at the plea deal, they called it a smorgasbord of fraudulent charges. They had a number of things filed or that was part of this plea agreement. So shifting gears, we just learned today, even though it was kind of expected a couple weeks ago, the Weekly Standard is closed. Media DC, the owner of Weekly Standard, and actually its owner is...
That's Bill Kristol, isn't it?
Yeah, Bill Kristol is one of the founders. Anyway, you got Clarity Media Group, which is the owner of its publisher, which is Media DC. Some of these companies are so huge. The announcement came after the magazine's editor-in-chief, Stephen Hayes, but privately with Ryan McKibben, the chairman of Weekly Standards publisher Media DC. The magazine basically said that it's closing. It'll publish its final issue December 17th, most which it's a print magazine, so I think it's already actually in the works. They basically closed the office. People were told to leave the office by the end of the day. John Ponderance, which is the editor of Commentary Magazine now, he was actually co-founder of Weekly Standard along with Bill Kristol and Fred Barnes. He tweeted out that they didn't even offer people boxes. So apparently the Weekly Standard staff will be getting, they're getting paid to the end of the year, and then they're going to be getting a severance package based on seniority and whatnot. And that they'll also have to sign a non-disclosure and non-disparagement agreement in order to get the severance package, which kind of makes sense. Even though it's kind of hard for people not to disparage a company that just dumped you. I have to say this, Weekly Standards, their subscriptions were down. Media DC and Clarity Media Group basically are saying this had nothing to do with Donald Trump. It had to do with circulation numbers that were down in double digits, which frankly could be as a result of their stance on Trump, I think.
No, I agree. They hurt themselves. I mean, for better or for worse, they staked out a position that they were never Trumper. And
right.
The way I understand it, I mean, even when Trump was doing things that were good, you know, I think they struggled to try to agree with that or support that or what have you.
Well, I'm not so sure how much of it was actually the magazine, and how much of it was actually Bill Kristol, who wasn't the editor in charge, but still very connected with Weekly Standard, and is still kind of seen as, you know, whatever he says gets reflected upon them.
Sure.
I've totally lost respect for Bill Kristol. I think he's thrown principles out the window. When you have to find ways to criticize the president, even on good policy, that just, to me, that just means you're unhinged, I think.
Well, I like Steve Hayes a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And I think they didn't navigate the post-Trump administration or the Trump presidency very well compared to National Review. I still think you could be Trump skeptical and critical of Trump without, you know, going overboard. I think National Review has found that balance. Weekly Standard, obviously, I don't think did. And
yep.
I think that contributed to their decline. I also
think
they were kind of overpriced, too. I looked at a Weekly Standard subscription a while back. I'm like, I'm not paying that much.
I can't speak to that. But
well,
go ahead.
I don't think putting a paywall on their website helped them with traffic either. So unfortunately, I still think it was a crap move. The way it was handled here, you get, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas and, you know, you're giving people the boot. I think that's disgusting, but you could have given them more time than that. I think they could have made this announcement back in November.
I think people knew a month ago.
Probably.
I mean, there's been speculation about this for several weeks, so I'd be really surprised if they didn't see the writing on the wall.
Right, right. So, but unfortunately, you know, what I think stinks is that while Stephen Hayes was trying to find a different owner, they decided, no, we're not interested in selling. Instead, we're going to shutter you, and we want the we basically want your list. So I'm like, oh, that stinks. You know,
it does, doesn't it? That I mean,
yeah.
If that's the case, it's a real head scratcher. But
definitely.
But look, and I mean, I think at the end. Go ahead.
Well, you know, nothing against, you know, Washington Examiner. I think they're a quality publication, and they're going to be starting a weekly magazine, kind of replacing Weekly Standard. But I don't know. I wasn't happy. I think Trump people celebrating what happened to Weekly Standard, and I think, you know, that's just awful too, because it's like you got these people with families who've just found out they lost their job.
Yeah,
you know, we shouldn't be celebrating that.
But I think there's no question that right now, National Review, I guess not surprisingly, given the fact that it's the granddaddy of conservative publications, but it really is reflective of conservatism today.
Yeah.
I mean, more so than any other publication, you know, either online or in print. I think they do a really, really nice job. They've got a good group of writers. You know, so from my perspective, they do the best job of reflecting where conservatism is at the present day.
Yeah, I agree. They're definitely a go-to for me. Judd Pomerantz, who wrote a commentary of the murder of the Weekly Standard.
The murder of
the Weekly Standard. I'm like, tell me how you really feel, man. But he ended his article. He said, the cessation of the Standard is an intellectual and political crime. I hope and expect its subscribers, tens of thousands of whom have been with the magazine since its very first day, will demand refunds rather than serve as passive participants in this act of politico-cultural murder. If you are a Standard subscriber but not yet a commentary reader, write to me, gives his email address. Have I got a deal for you? Your proper home is here. I'm like, strike while the iron is hot.
Oh, yeah, the body's not even cold.
It's like, dude, wait a week at least, you know?
Yeah. At least wait till after the funeral.
Definitely. So their last magazine comes out on the 17th. He can write that. He should write that on the 18th. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. So I'm sad to see them go. I think they would have been better off jettisoning Bill Kristol and trying to work things out with Clarity Media Group, because I think more of this had to do with Trump than what they're letting on. But it is what it is, and obviously.
Here's the thing: there should be for a publication like that, there should be a life after Donald Trump. Hello.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, whatever conservatism is going to look like moving forward, don't you think you'd be better off being around to try to help, you know, shape that and mold that? I mean, for all we know, President Trump is only going to be president for another couple of years at best, for all we know. So,
right,
you know, find a way to survive until after it's over. I don't know. That just seems really short-sighted to, you know, essentially sacrifice your existence, you know, over a quarrel with the current president of the United States. But agreed. What do I know? I'm a guy that lives, you know, 25 yards from a cornfield.
Oh, well, anyway, obviously they have a right to do it with their businesses they so choose. I just, I think there's probably a better way to handle that, but it is what
you'd
it
think.
Is. So
you'd think.
Sign up. Yeah, see you later, Weekly Standard. So any thoughts about what you think 2019 is going to bring?
Oh, well, it could be really interesting to see, first of all, how much longer the Mueller investigation goes and what all the new House of Representatives is going to, you know, are they going to be investigating everything from procurement of paper clips, at the White House to who knows what, you know? I mean, it'll be really interesting. You kind of get the impression you're going to see a new investigation every week out of the House. So,
I would not be surprised. It's going to definitely ramp up.
So
unfortunately, House Republicans should have probably been doing it a little bit more. I think they were probably a little more Trumpian than they should have been, but oh well.
Sounds like you got a guest in the studio there.
yeah. If that comes out on audio, that was my mini schnauzer going ballistic at something outside.
When you said Trump's name, it was probably more than it could handle.
Yeah. Well, this is probably a good time to wrap up so I could check out what she's freaking out about. So, hey, Brian, it was a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was good talking with you again, Shane. Take care.
Good talking with you. We'll have to do this more often.
Absolutely. Take care, buddy.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
See ya.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you are listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, caffeinatedthoughts.com, be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Or you can just Google caffeinated, that's spelled CAFFEINATED, thoughts, and we'll show up right at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Also, you can sign up for our email updates. That way you don't miss a single update on the website because obviously we do a lot more than just the podcast. Also, subscribe to this podcast. That way you don't miss a single episode and you can listen using your favorite podcast apps such as we're currently on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Play. We're on Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean. If there's one that we're missing that you'd like to see us on, shoot me an email at shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com and let me know what that is, and we'll see to make sure we can make that happen. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Happy Friday. I hope you have an excellent weekend, and we'll see you next week. Take care.